I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast, where you will be inspired and empowered to connect more deeply with your authentic self as we explore topics of personal development, leadership, and spirituality. Your journey to your most authentic self starts right now. Janina Kennedy has worked in the field of addictions for 35 years, helping women heal. We discuss what it means to be an addict or alcoholic, how traumas and shame relate to addictions, how someone who is using can get help, and how loved ones can support them. We also talk about how being an addict interferes with your ability to be your most authentic self. And we leave on a positive note about the freedom and joy of being sober. Welcome, Janina Kennedy, to Soul Sister Conversations.
Thank you, Dana. It's nice to be here.
I'm delighted to have this conversation around women and addictions. And you have worked for 35 years in the field of addictions, and you chose this field of work to help others because you yourself have been sober for 42 years.
Yes, so, that was.
Congratulations on that.
Oh, thanks.
That's a long time. So first off, let's talk about what is happening with respect to women and alcohol. What is the trend? Is it trending upward or downward? Is it staying the same? What's happening?
I think it's trending upward. I think that women are, and girls are drinking at younger ages. And I think it's, you know, it's causing more problems in that regard. The marketing of alcohol has been geared towards young women. And when we see these, all these coolers that had come out and all the different wines, you know, skinny jeans wine. And I'm trying to remember the names of some of the others, but, a lot of them have been directed at young women.
Okay, so just the branding. Branding and the marketing around it is being attractive, exactly. Basically saying if you do this, you could be skinny, you know, and all, and
that's,
I guess,
right.
Subconsciously.
And mama needs a night out, and all of these different names that are, you know, that will apply. And I've noticed it myself, like if I've, you know, just the names, I've noticed that has become quite, very different.
Yes, a new thing on the market. I haven't noticed that in terms of those kinds of marketing. Perhaps I don't drink those kinds of things. Maybe I don't. I didn't. There's so many things on the market these days. But so how would you define an addict? Or I guess, is alcoholic and addict the same thing?
Well, I think they're just different names. I mean, an alcoholic is someone who is addicted to alcohol. An addict is, you know, sometimes we've heard, you know, that addict may apply to other drugs, or, you know, Oxycontin, heroin, LSD, whatever it has been over the years. But I think addict is addict. It's just different words that are used. How to define that someone is an alcoholic. And I guess what we look at it's not how much you drink or how little you drink. It's what happens, you know, what are some of the things that happen with the drinking, and what kinds of problems are there in a person's life that they would perhaps not have if they were not using alcohol. And we look at it in terms of, like, we have a way of looking at it. And a lot of times when I'm working with women, we'll look at the fact that when people first begin using, some people, now there are people that from their very first, there are women that from their very first drink have problems with it and have blackouts and, you know, do act in a way that's very... not, you know, it's not usually the way that they act, but it's about, you know, people that women that, use and maybe from the very beginning, other people. And a lot of times that you see with women, it starts out as being fun, you know, they have control over, you know, when they drink, how much they drink, you know, who they're hanging with, and, and how often, and they usually know the reason. You know, you're going out with some friends, and you're going to have fun. So those would be definite reasons. A lot of times when we see women that have crossed over that barrier and into problem drinking, we're seeing, you know, they no longer know why they're doing it anymore. So what we look at in terms of what's happening is, you know, has it changed, you know, when you drink, with who you drink, how much you drink, and where you drink. And it's about a loss of control. It's about losing control over when you drink. You know, there may have been a time.
Say more about that, losing control over when you
drink. Well, losing control. So let's say that you've gone from, you know, partying in university, perhaps, you know, drinking more at that time. However, later on, you find that you wanted more and you needed more. Social drinkers are not really like that. And I'm even talking about people that may, you know, drink heavily that are not addicted, you know, they're still functioning. But when we begin to look at, you know, women will drink at times and it goes against their own values. It goes against their own interior values. And going to pick up the kids at school after having had a couple of drinks. At one point in their life, they may have thought that is the worst thing that could happen and that's the worst thing I could do. And then they find themselves doing that and going against their own inner values. And you see a lot of shame around this, because women in addictions, there's a lot of shame, because it's shame-based behavior.
Mm-hmm. Doing things they didn't intend to do.
Well, doing things that they didn't intend to do, or doing things that go against, you know, everything that they believe in.
For sure.
And, you know, not hanging around, you know, ending up, you know, waking up places that they hadn't planned on being, you know, doing things, not being able to make it to work, not being able to make it to school, whatever it is, you know.
And when I think of an addict, you know, I've often thought of, you know, associate it more with illegal drugs, but alcohol is legal. We live in a drinking culture, you know, it's acceptable. Yeah, it is a way that people bond, we celebrate, we buy champagne and toast mm-hmm. each other. So it becomes this fine line, right? Because every, you know, majority of the people are do it, I think, in some fashion. And so it feels like it can be a slippery slope. So how does it go from, you know, what are the red flags around addiction? Like you just talked about, you know, waking up in places that you didn't intend, but what about the social drinking? When does that become a problem, that you're just doing it for fun, you're going out with the girls, and then suddenly you're having a glass of wine every night?
Exactly. Does that
qualify as an alcoholic, or is that?
Well, it goes back to what's happening. You know, lots of people can drink and they don't change. Their personality doesn't change. They don't change the things that they normally do. They're able to make it home, you know, make it to work, make it to, you know, whatever it is that they're doing in their day. But it's about the change in them. One of the things, like a lot of times, I've heard, you know, a lot from women over the years, that a lot of times young people drink because of the you know, they're shy, they're self-conscious, which is very normal. Mm-hmm. And the more they continue to put themselves out there and do the same things, they learn those skills.
Right.
However, a lot of times if they begin drinking to deal with that shyness and they need to drink every time, then they're not getting those skills, and the drinking is still there. They can't do anything without it. And sometimes that creates a dependence.
And is drinking both a physical and an emotional dependence addiction?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, your body craves it.
Yeah, your body craves it, and emotionally you need it, and to feel, you know, just to feel normal.
Mm, yeah.
So by the time that women, or by the time women come to us, they have no idea. And so we'll look back at, you know, when was the time that you had control over it? What was going on in your life? What happened? You know, what happened from there on? And it's usually about using much more, and and it becoming a very big part of their lives and becoming something big in their lives that they need to do. And they no longer have any idea why they're doing it.
Yeah.
But feel that they need it.
Feel that they need it in their life.
To function, yes.
To function, just to get through their day, whether it's for like stress or dealing with stressful situations, exactly. Or like you said, if you're shy or you overcome personality, not even deficits, but what they see is be able to more easily to show up in life, I guess.
That's right, I guess.
So what kind of women are you seeing in the counseling? Like, what is the age range? Like, what's the largest, fastest growing group of women that are struggling with addictions?
Well, we see a lot of younger women struggling with, you know, multi-addictions, alcohol.
And what age group are you talking about?
I'm talking about 18 to 30.
Okay, 18 to 30.
And, you know, a lot of opiate addiction, a lot of, you know, multi-drug use.
And these,
but we're also seeing women that found themselves, like, there's a lot of the profile now of the alcoholic woman is highly educated, highly functional,
right?
Until it's not. I don't know if you've ever read the book by Anne Dowsett. She does a book called Drink. And, you know, she was a very highly functional, highly educated, and became addicted and found it very difficult to believe that she had become addicted and thought that she was still doing everything perfectly in her life, you know, until one of her children had talked to her about what was actually going on, you know.
Okay. And what was actually going on? What was the child reflecting back?
The child was talking about their relationship. You know, she had very little time for it, and she wasn't the same. She was, she had changed, like her personality had changed. And so the child was talking to her about, and it was a grown child, like, you know, a young adult, and was talking to them about her just always being there with a glass of wine and being very sad about it.
Okay.
So it was no longer fun. She was no longer having fun with it.
Does alcohol ultimately change your personality, or just changes your personality while you're using?
I think that it changes a person. It's, you know, I do believe that it changes people. I do believe it changes women. I mean, the things that happen, you know, with heavy drinking and not, you know, the difficulties and the amount of, you know, how difficult it is on the body, on the physical body. And of course it affects you mentally. And a lot of times, I mean, for the women that we see, it's not little things that are happening. It's crises, you know, it's driving while impaired charges, it's loss of children. And of course brings on, you know, so much shame. But it's, you know, it's losses in life. It's losses. And so that's what we're seeing a lot of, and in crises coming into treatment. They don't usually come in without a crisis.
There's some turning point where they're getting a DUI, or they've like you said, they've lost them. There's some breaking point, or maybe their family has given them an ultimatum,
or a relationship has ended because of, you know, children are upset because the person that they know and love is no longer there in the way that, you know, that they used to be. Or at work, you're getting warnings at work, or losing jobs, you know, those kinds of things.
And what is the physical toll that it takes on the body, you mentioned? Like, what do you see happening to people?
Exhaustion, you know, a loss of connection with, you know, physical exercise. A lot of gastro problems, you know, unable to sleep, unable to get through the day and feel joy in that. And usually by the time that we would see women, they're, you know, they've lost a job, or they're, you know, they've been put on a warning that their job is going to be gone.
And what are the mental side effects that you see from this constant abuse of alcohol?
Anxiety. A lot of times, you know, anxiety, depression.
And is that because they know they're using or that they have a problem?
Well, yeah. And they may know that they have a problem, but I mean, whatever the alcohol is buffering, you know, they're not willing to give it up. It's very, very difficult to give up because it's like, at least they know that life. There's a lot of fear around and a lot of grief around discontinuing use and coming into a program.
Right.
The interesting thing that I was reading back some time ago was that, I don't know if it was United Nations or the World Health, they had done, they had published an article on treating drug addiction among women. And all, you know, throughout the whole world, they discovered that the issues are similar. You know, the struggle is universal. It's all around, you know, the stigma, the shame, the physical, the sexual abuse, the relationship issues, you know. And it's hard for women to come into treatment sometimes, and particularly if they are, you know, single parent women, if that's, you know, the issue, because, you know, it's the fear of losing children, it's the fear of losing a partner. Sometimes it's needing a partner's permission to come into treatment. And then, of course, with the treatment issues, sometimes it, you know, it appears that there's a lack of service for women, and a lack of understanding sometimes of women's treatment, long waiting lists, and of course, you know, affordability and those sorts of things, you know.
Are there less resources for women than there are men, as you're saying, or?
Well, I think that even though, you know, things are certainly, they are changing. I think that it's, you know, that when I talk about the services for women, I'm talking about if, you know, and it's all about choice, you know, women only gender specific treatment is about choice, because some women don't choose to come into gender specific treatment. But for women that are looking for gender specific treatment, there's certainly less facilities available to them to do that.
Yeah.
And also still, although, and I said, again, it is changing, but I mean, women are sometimes looking after their own children, looking after parents. It's that, you know, that sandwich society that women are looking after. Women have so many tasks, you know, they're multitasks and multi-roles, you know. Mm. And also, you know, even though like they're, you know, coming home from work and, you know, a lot of times taking on another job when they get home.
Mm. And it's especially taxing right now with what's going on with COVID, and we have children working at home, and parents are trying to balance their jobs and making sure their kids get educated. You know, it is That's concerning right. the increasing it's responsibility.
It's huge. It's huge. Mm.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions there, and there's a lot of worrying and a lot of anxiety, you know, and very little breaks, you know, for parents in general, but very, very few breaks for women in that particular situation.
And I'm thinking that, you know, if someone feels like they're drinking, you know, quite often or every day even, I guess it feels like it can be a slippery slope, you know, into having a problem with it. And I'm just trying to think, you know, what are some red flags? And I guess maybe you've touched on it, because I like what you say, you know, what happened to you when you use and what happens when you don't drink?
Yeah.
Because I think that's equally important, is what happens to you when you don't drink. So can you deal with your anxiety? Can you deal with the stressful situation? Can you get through your day without having a drink? It's so funny that, you know, when people drink, you know, it almost seems like they're bigger and better than ever. And they're like, I'm really going to take on tomorrow. It's like a false self that you create, in order to convince yourself, that tomorrow is going to be better.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot, there's still, you know, although we've, again, we've come a long way, but there's still a lot of stigma around, and shame again around women and their use of alcohol.
And I had someone tell me that all addictions are trauma. True?
Yes, they are.
Can you say more about that? Why are all addictions trauma? And define trauma. Because often I think we think trauma is large, but I'm thinking that it could be the smaller things that happen in your life that upset you.
Well, I think there are all kinds of things. I mean, beneath, you know, a lot of times there's so much trauma that happens with, you know, addictions. But also it's the loss of self, the loss of that life that they perhaps once had. You know, it kind of, so the trauma, and I'm not quite sure what you're asking about it, but if we're talking about trauma, you know, sometimes the alcohol buffers the trauma that lies beneath it. Now, as you said, trauma can be very big or it can be very small, and it can be intentional or it can be not intentional. I mean, we right. take someone that's growing up in a family and perhaps mom gets sick and is no longer able to look after, you know, the children, or dad gets sick and is no longer able to look after the children, or a family member has mental health issues and needs to be hospitalized, or a family member goes to jail or whatever it is. So that's trauma as well. It's not just like we hear so much about trauma, and a lot of times they're talking about physical trauma and, you know, or sexual trauma. And yes, that's also, you know, very prevalent in the clients that come in for treatment. But the alcohol, a lot of times acts as a buffer. And so when they take that buffer away, it's very painful. It's a very painful experience. And there's a grief. That's when I talk about the grief that's there with addictions. That's what I'm talking about. And it's so important. You know, I've found that so important over the years in working with women to talk about that grief that happens when they give it up, because it means that these emotions that they've been, you know, suppressing are going to be felt.
Right.
You know, there's a saying in the field, you can't heal what you can't feel, and you can't feel what you medicate. Mm-hmm. But yet it's teaching women and men too. I think that how, you know, people have been socialized as well has not been, you know, great for either gender. And I think that originally we talked a lot about, you know, about women and the trauma that women have lived with. Many women, and a lot of our women that come in have trauma, physical, sexual trauma. But this is also, you know, men as well. But when we talk about working with women and dealing with trauma, it's about dealing with both. It's about women coming into, you know, trauma-informed practice where you're aware off the stats and what women's experience has been like and what this particular woman's experience has been like. Mm-hmm. And it's about beginning to peel back some of these layers so she's able to see herself as she believes, she, you know, that she has, or perhaps what she has been in the past and what she can be. And sometimes it's extremely painful. The strength of women always humbles me. The strength that women have, and their ability to heal, and their ability to connect with other people. And women do very well with that. Women connections for women and relationships for women are very important. And so that connecting with other women who have the same problems, similar issues, is so helpful. It's just very helpful to them to be able to look at that and deal with that in a group such as that.
And now, are you involved with AA, or is it a separate type of counseling
well,
that you do?
AA is it's a support. It's support. It's 12-step. It's a recovery program. There are a lot of programs and treatment centers use AA as a support. And it's a good support if it works for the person, and if the person is okay with that particular, you know, kinds of supports. It was certainly how I that AA was my way of coming into recovery, and it's a wonderful program. But again, it doesn't, you know, not everybody likes it. We it's about choice, and that's what, you know, finding different resources. It's about choice and what works best in a woman's life. Mm. AA appears to work best for most, but it's just one of the resources that we use. Mm.
If a woman is sensing that she's struggling, realizing that she needs help, what is the first step that she should do?
Well, she could talk to her doctor if her doctor is open. Mm-hmm. She could, you know, look up the local addictions in her community. She could, you know, look to see what's available in her community. She could call the AA helplines. Most AA areas have helplines, and they would match a woman up with a woman if she needed to talk to somebody, that sort of thing. So it's about looking at what's available out there. And today, of course, everything is online, so you can find almost any help with anything that you need. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows somebody that stopped drinking, though, you know? When we look back at that, and we're talking about women, when we're looking at building supports for them, and we're looking at, you know, what supports are there in your life already. And they'll think of somebody that they knew that used to drink like them, but all of a sudden they don't see them very much anymore. Mm-hmm. And then come to, you know, find out that they've gotten themselves into recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how can people support someone who is using alcohol or drugs? What can the family do or friends do to help support that person?
Well, I think that working with families, off someone that's in treatment, of a woman or a man that's in treatment, is vitally important. I mean, families see the person going through all kinds of difficulties. And a lot of times, you know, people get blamed for being bad people. Addicted people get blamed for being bad people. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult. And especially, I mean, addiction robs the whole family of anything good, you know, because there's so many issues with it. So it's vitally important when that there's a family program that they can attend. It's important to talk to the family and educate them as well that your loved one is not doing this deliberately to you. This is not the way that she wants to be. And it's so true, you know, no one ever decides, well, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to drink and I'm going to mess up my life, like, you know, whatever way that their lives are being, you know, affected. No one ever feels like that. There's so much shame with what people do, what women do to their families because of their drinking. And so it's very difficult. So when we get families together, we need to talk to them. We need to talk to, you know, to our families and tell them, like, okay, you need something as well. Like you need some support as well. And then it's about getting the family into a program for families where they can talk about themselves, talk about their own needs and what they're willing to do with their loved one, you know, putting up boundaries. But it's really about the family taking care of themselves too. You know, and you see some wonderful things. There's you know, there are so many wonderful families there are just so many wonderful families, and there's so many wonderful, people that have difficulty with addictions. It's very prevalent, you know?
Yeah. And what does someone do if you see or you know someone who you think is having a problem with alcohol, but the person is in denial, they don't see that? Is there anything that you can do, or how do you help that, or how do you?
Well, I think that you can. I mean, I think that there's always a seed that can be planted. I think it's really important not to judge, and it's important that not while they're drinking, but perhaps when they're sober. If that person is someone that you know or someone that you're connected with, it's just to talk to them. Now, the person that you're talking to that's having difficulty with alcohol may not be very responsive. Mm-hmm. But if you do it gently, I think it's important. How many times do we have, how many times are people at parties and they see someone really drunk and they leave and, maybe not so much anymore, but, they don't want to get involved. They don't want to get involved with that person. And so it's about becoming aware. It's about making sure that someone gets home safe, that someone is, taken care of, sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah. How does being addicted interfere with people being their authentic selves?
Well, if you're addicted, your focus is on your addiction. They've lost a lot of times, we'll hear women say, I used to be so different, and they want us to understand what they used to do differently. And perhaps it was a talent, a real talent that they had. Perhaps they had, gifts. Maybe they were artistic. Perhaps they played an instrument. Perhaps they were just very good at something that they loved to do. And they were so incredibly good with their families, their parents, their siblings. But when you're addicted, that's your focus. That's your focus. It's not that you want it to be, but it's almost like being lost, It's like they know what they're doing is wrong, but that's the only thing that seems to take the pain away.
So when you say they're focused on their addiction, are they thinking about the next drink or the next time use it, or how to hide it, or exactly. It just becomes all consuming?
Yes, it does. It becomes all consuming.
That's interesting. What is it that you want us to know about women and addictions, or women and alcohol, that we haven't yet stated?
I think it's really important for us to carry that message to women that are struggling, that it doesn't have to be like that, that there are people there that will help. There are people there that understand and know that you're not a bad person. And I think that's the thing that I love the most about having worked with women all of these years, has been that it's about looking at and saying that to them, that we understand that this is not how you planned it to happen. This is not that you planned it. And it's about the worth, like it's finding whatever group, whether that's AA, whether that's, family, finding a group to continue to make you feel that you're worth something, that you're worth a lot, that you're really important. And that this is an illness. This is it's a disorder. It's an illness. It's whatever way that they want to kind of see it. But it's it's about feeling worth, because most times when folks come into treatment, they don't feel very much worth.
Right. Mm-hmm. When you talk about it being an illness, can you say more about that? Because I'm not, I know I've heard that it's an illness. So how is it an illness?
I think that it's medically, it's an illness. I mean, people are hospitalized a lot. People, there's a lot of issues that go along with the medical illness as a whole. There's so many illnesses that come along. There's the depression, the anxiety, the mental health issues, the inability to eat properly, to proper nutrition, proper exercise, those kinds of things.
So would the addiction or the abuse be defined as a disease? Like I often hear alcoholism is a disease, or that's what it creates.
Thought, there are many schools of thought. It creates that illness, but mm-hmm. I mean, it's also, there are, medical, believe that it's, a medical condition, of course, that gets worse with continued use. I think that it's important, it's really important to, if people could, I think if we could give something to people, I think that it would be really great if they could understand that their life doesn't have to be like that.
Right.
That there is the ability for it to be different. Because a lot of times people, think that this is the only way that I can live. And so they don't get to see, that there is a much better way to live and a happier way to live. And the one thing that I've always seen is that there's a lot of happiness that goes along. Like women come into treatment, come into recovery, and there's a lot of pain, but there's also a lot of laughter once they begin to realize that they're in a safe environment and they're being, affirmed, they're being taken care of, that there's, understanding and education and therapy and all of those wonderful things that come along with. And it's a very wonderful feeling. And there's a lot of laughter around those things and a lot of support. Women are very, very good to each other. And I see that particularly in treatment, because they have this illness in common, and men, they have so much in common. And it's not like, it's not to come to treatment. It's not always a dark place. There may be days and there may be times as you struggle through, but it's about building, a program of support and looking at, afterward. And I just wanted to mention something. When I first started work in the field of addictions, I was working in a rural area in Cape Breton. And of course, I really wanted to, I was serving two communities actually, and wanted to really do a women's group. And so I had about maybe 10 women together on my caseloads from both communities. So we kind of met in the middle, and another staff person had come in and had helped me deliver this group. And we did the group. We met for a whole week every day. We did all kinds of, teaching, education and therapy and all of those wonderful things. But it was what that group became that always stayed with me. I think I was so incredibly lucky to have witnessed it. And one of the things that happened, that in that group, we had a woman who was a nurse. She didn't have a license and she didn't have a babysitter. And no one talked about it in group, but I became aware that a couple of these women got together and they helped her. One of the women babysat her little girl, and the other took her. She didn't have a driver's license, and so she couldn't get to jobs. So one of the women looked after her child, and the other women taught her to drive.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And it was amazing. And when I look back at that group, there was 10 women in the group, three of them or four of them, I have no idea, where I have lost touch, but the rest maintained sobriety, they stayed sober.
What is the sobriety rate? Do majority people stay sober when they come through the programs?
Well, I think when they come, I mean, I think the national average is what, about 50%. So I think there are some treatment, you know, places that are 60%. But I think that, you know, addiction is, it's a very complex. Mm. It's very complex. And early stage recovery, which is usually the first 2 years, there's a struggle there to learn the skills, you know, the drink drug refusal and to deal with the emotions and to deal with, you know, relationships and deal with their environment. So during that time, it's not uncommon to see people relapse during that time. But we try to teach people that if that happens, like if there is a relapse, that it can be very helpful as well, right? You can say, okay, what was I doing that, what happened? How did I get off track like that? What was at the bottom of that? What triggered that? And what happened to me, you know, through that? And sometimes, you know, people that leave need to go through, sometimes, not always, but people go through a relapse. And learn from that, and may happen a couple of times.
And to not look at it as a shameful thing, or you know, that it's part of the healing journey.
See, I always found that working with people, when they would come, when I would be working with them and they would relapse, it always taught both of us so much. It taught me something, and it taught the client, you know, what their hook was, you know, what keeps taking you back, you know, what is it that tells you after you being sober or not using for a period of time, what is it then that tells you that it's okay to do that? And so then you begin to look at something perhaps deeper and work on that.
And what did you learn from these experiences?
Of working with these clients?
Mm-hmm. Because you said you often learned when they were learning too. So I find that interesting.
Well, I would often learn, usually when a relapse happens, it's difficult. It's very difficult for them. And they go right, you know, they judge themselves very harshly. So from what I was learning was more about this person, what this person was like, you know, what had happened to them. And so it would, you know, it would deepen that bond of trust that needs to be there, and they would be able to perhaps open up more. And I would learned a lot about patience too, you know, a lot about being patient with people and holding space for them and just being there. And you know, those sorts of things.
How has helping women in this field served your higher purpose?
Well, I think it's probably one of the it's probably been one of the most humbling things, I think, that I've ever witnessed. And I think that because of my own life and my own experience with addiction, I think I wanted other women to experience that and to recognize that life is so great. Mm. You know, life is so great. And for, you know, there's just a feeling that comes with working with women and being with a woman and helping to alleviate some of that shame, because it's so unreal and it's so it's so devastating for them. So being able to just show that, you know, to be able to be compassionate, it's made me extremely compassionate. And you know, which is certainly a good thing to have.
Yeah.
But it's been a wonderful experience because it's been so extremely interesting, you know, to work with these women and see, you know, women sober up. And in the, you know, sometimes I think, oh my goodness, like, you know, what women have been able to come through. And that's true with all addicts, not just women, of course.
Right. Mm. Very gratifying work.
It's very gratifying work.
Yeah, it's very gratifying work. Yeah, this has been, I love where we've gone in this conversation. I think it'll be very helpful to a lot of people. I just have a few last questions for you.
Sure.
What can you tell me about the power of being you without alcohol?
The power, it's just so wonderful. The power of being me has been about being able to have this freedom to live my life the way that I wanted to, and to be at an age that I'm at now where it's great. It's like it's such a freedom, and it's about just being able to love deeper, to be able to share, and not worry about so many things that are so unimportant.
What has become abundantly clear to you?
That kindness and compassion is probably the best gift that we can offer another human being.
And what does the world need most?
The world needs most kindness. Mm. You know, it needs kindness, and it needs it just needs that love and kindness that and support and laughter. The world needs laughter.
Mm, and isn't that the best when you can laugh?
It is.
Yeah.
It's so great to be able to laugh. Mm. You know,
I think this conversation has shed light on this topic for anyone who's struggling or knows someone who is struggling, that there can be light again. There can be laughter again. There can be love again. There can be wholeness. Yeah.
There can be light, and there can be, and it's a whole new kind of laughter. It's a laughter that encompasses just the good things that are there in life, like being able to enjoy your family to the uttermost, you know? And I think that that's something that recovering people never take for granted is, you know, their children and their children's children and their friends. And, you know, I remember a woman saying to me, and this is when I was still using, and I remember she had said to me, you know, it's like not being able to see the sunshine or seeing the sunset. Okay. And I had no idea what she was talking about, but she was talking to me about a freedom that I yet didn't know. And I think about that often. That it's a freedom. It's a real freedom.
That's a great message to end on. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate this a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Dana.
That was such a great conversation. If you loved it too, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Please go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. And if you want to continue the conversation, connect with Soul Sister Conversations on the Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dana Lloyd Leadership, on Twitter at Coach Dana_Lloyd, and of course on LinkedIn. See you next week.